This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Jason Bishop.
Yes, sir.
And Johnny Cake Sawville. Mm-hmm. How great is it that EB's not here on the day when Paige Spiranek joins us in studio?
Pop her up.
Right. She's his idol. But you know what? We get to talk some golf now with Paige. We've had Paige on the show before, on the phone, and you know she's an internet sensation. And I don't know, you hate it.
I hate that.
You don't like that title.
No, I don't like
you
that
hate
title.
It, but right, you must this? Embrace I mean, it to
about
an
media,
extent.
Media sensation. I'll give you that.
You're posting pictures and things like that.
But sensation sounds like
okay,
it's...
fine. But it's not like you're off social media. You
no.
You could choose to be off it, then you wouldn't be dubbed that.
It's a positive thing.
It's a positive thing. It's just, when they say it, I'm like, oh, man.
So how do you like to be introduced?
I don't know. Everyone always asks me that, and I don't really even know, like, what I do. I guess I'm a social media influencer or a golf ambassador.
There you go.
Ambassador is a nice term.
Ambassador.
Ambassador yeah. works.
Right. Yeah. Especially here in D.C. It's perfect. Apropos.
Model... I used to play professionally. I notice now if I say I'm a professional golfer, even though I still am technically, mm-hmm. people get so upset about that. So I try not to like say that anymore.
Right.
So
yeah, right. So you're in town for, yeah. I want you to promote We Are Golf, which mm-hmm. is a coalition of the game's leading associations and industry partners. You guys are going to hold the 11th annual National Golf Day tomorrow on Capitol. I didn't even know that existed. But it's tomorrow on Capitol Hill here in D.C. National Golf Day celebrates the game's nearly $70 billion economy, nearly $4 billion annual charitable impact. And you can follow them on Twitter at We Are Golf. Why don't you talk to us about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I'm so excited to be here. It's my first time here. And we're just going to promote golf, talk about it, talk about all the great things that it's doing, what we want to do next. A lot of the industry leaders are here, so it's just a celebration of golf and all the good that it's doing, and then all just trying to make it better.
Mm-hmm. When did you start playing?
So I started when I was 12. I was a competitive gymnast, got injured pretty bad a couple times, and mm-hmm. then switched over to golf.
And was it easy to pick up? See, the thing about golf, and I've been a casual golfer at best over the years, and I didn't really play for the first 25 years of my life. Then I played a little bit, and then I played a little bit more, and then I kind of fell off trying to play a little bit more. But golf can be expensive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it becoming Absolutely. More accessible for people?
Definitely. I think when people have this idea of golf, they think of old men in a country club drinking beer and smoking cigars. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's some of
that's
it.
The life.
That's why Jason embraces it
yeah.
so much.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
He wraps his arms around it.
Right. And so, by the way, she said old guys.
Yeah.
And we are old.
We fit the demo, right. Sadly.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a great social activity to get out there, and it's great for everyone of all ages. But when I grew up, I didn't have a lot of money. And so I would clean the pro shop to get golf balls, and what I wear now is kind of what I was wearing before because I couldn't afford golf clothes.
Right.
So I'd wear just whatever I could find in my closet. So there are ways to get around it. You can go to driving ranges. I feel most comfortable, you know, at one of those dog tracks of a golf course.
Right.
And, you know, like tin cup style. But you can get buckets of balls for like less than $5. You can play golf courses. You know, there's things you can do to play. Everyone can play. It can be expensive. I mean, but that's the same thing with everything. You can get a really expensive car, but it'll still get you to, you know, point A, point B. So
it's also time consuming. I mean, you know, a married guy has got to tell his wife, all right, it's going to be a 7 or 8 hour commitment. Now, it's fine for me. I'm fine with that.
Right.
I like how his becomes now, 7 or 8 hours.
Yeah.
Well, I can pull it in like
five hours on the course, but then it's 2 hours of socializing.
Yeah, you're driving to the course, you're driving home, you're having a cocktail after the round or two or three. So it can be time consuming. Yes, it could be expensive because equipment's not cheap. If you want to look the part out there, clothes aren't cheap.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, I love it. I'm addicted to it. And golf was at its peak, obviously, when Tiger was as dominating, right? Yeah. Everyone was golf courses, new golf courses were being built, you know, seems like every hour. Mm-hmm. And then when Tiger went through his struggles, it took a dip. And the golf industry definitely took a dip. But you feel like it's coming back.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I was at the Masters this year. And obviously, Tiger's making his comeback. And it just had this energy.
I did see you at the Masters. What did you do there?
I was just there.
Just hanging out.
Yeah, gotcha. I had a bet with my dad. He needed to lose weight. And I said, if you lost a certain amount of weight, I'll take you to the Masters. And he ended up losing, I think, over 35 pounds. So we went to the Masters this year. So
sweet.
Just to enjoy it. It was his first time there.
Right, but you feel like golf's coming back.
But it's was the energy there was just crazy. And you even see it now at like all the PGA Tour events. Like, there's massive crowds.
Right.
And everyone's just so excited because you have, you know, the young guys with Jordan and Justin and Rory and Ricky. And then you have Tiger coming back. And then you still have, you know, some of the greats playing really well. So it's definitely on the up. And I think the biggest thing is just bringing more diversity into the game. Mm-hmm. And that's just maybe, you know, you said it's time consuming. So why can't we offer like a 6-hole or like, you know, different options, 3 holes, whatever it may be, just so we can get people out there to play.
Right.
And I think that people just need to kind of open up their mind and say like, yeah, golf is 18 holes, or golf might be this way, but let's bring more people in.
I've had respectable scorecards through 3 holes.
I'm bad through every hole, but I'm kind of with her on if I could go and play a 3-hole round or a 6-hole round.
Just sneak out before,
after
work.
I'd be done in an hour. That's more palatable to me.
Well, I mean, you could play 9.
Might be onto something there.
What's wrong with 9?
9's a lot. 3 or 6.
She's
talking about language now. She's starting to reel me back in.
9, the doubles start popping out.
3, I think, is
3, I can master.
Paige, have you become friendly with any of the tour players, like the younger crew, like the Rickies or the Jordans or the, you know, Rorys? Have you become friendly with them?
So I grew up playing with Justin Thomas, and he's a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool to see him being super successful. Through all the media work, I spent some time with Rory in Dubai, and he's an awesome guy. So I was a starter also in Dubai, so I met everyone there that day. And you start to meet these guys, and they're really good guys. So it's fun to see them.
Is that where you played the LPGA European event in Dubai? Was
yeah,
in Dubai?
I played that for 2 years, and then obviously had a very terrible experience. And so
why was that? Just because you were just so nervous?
So it was my very first tour event,
right?
And it ended up turning into this big spectacle of like, I don't know, like, why is she here? Does she deserve it? Like, all this stuff.
Right.
And so the very first time I was so nervous, I was just, I couldn't handle it. I was like a wreck. And it was very obvious I was
just
a wreck.
Just to take a step back, for those that don't know, give us your golf background and why
you
get to that point
of
she doesn't deserve it. Because you weren't on the LPGA.
No,
you played
in
college, right?
Yeah, so played junior golf, had a good junior golf career, had a full ride to San Diego State University. And after I was done, I didn't have the financial needs to be able to play. So I just so happened to, it's such a weird story. So someone wrote an article about me, ended up going viral, and then overnight I gained a ton of followers, and then it just kind of snowballed into this, I guess, sensation, social media sensation.
You became an influencer.
An influencer. And I ended up getting an invite to this tournament.
But to be fair, you also, I think it would be fair to say you built a brand.
Yeah.
The Sporanic brand.
At that point, though, it wasn't a brand yet. It wasn't really anything.
Right.
It was just kind of this, I guess, cute girl playing golf. And that's kind of what my brand was. It wasn't the brand that it is today. And so I had a lot of negative reactions. A lot of people said I didn't deserve to be there. I was only there because of that I could bring attention to the tournament, which...
Right.
Was what they wanted, and that's what they got. So,
that's the reason Tony Romo just played on the.
Yeah,
on the
and people don't understand that, like, sponsor exemptions, it's not taking a spot away from anyone.
Right.
The tournament has the right to do whatever they want. They're putting this tournament on, they're paying for everything. And so they bring, usually it's like 5 to 10 people in every single tournament.
Right.
So I always think it's funny when they go all up in arms when it's like, you know.
And it's also
one
not
tournament.
Like you're shooting 100.
No, I mean, I. You know, I was a good player, and I thought this was a great opportunity, and it was my first event. It was a European Tour event. It wasn't even an LPG Tour event. I was like, okay, I'll take it. Again, ended up turning into something no one was prepared for, and did not play well because I was just so nervous.
Well, where was the criticism from? Was it from the media or from the players?
Everyone. Everyone.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I know Laura Davies was saying some stupid stuff.
Yeah. They were just saying, like, you don't deserve to be here. What are you wearing? Like, all of this stuff. So then played really bad. I was like, so then I played on right after that a year professionally, played really well. And then I was like, got the invite again. I was like, I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to come back. Same thing all over again. Got really nervous.
Negative reactions.
Really bad. And it sucks because that's how everyone remembers that those two tournaments were, you know, the scores that people always bring up. And I'm like, those are my two worst scores of like the last 4 years. But after that, I was like, I'm done. I'm not going to play professionally at all anymore.
Right.
And so the next year, they wanted me back and they're like, what can we do? So they brought me back for the men's event as the official starter. And no, I was like, I'm not playing. I don't care how much. Like, I'm done playing. I just, after that tournament,
was
mentally
it just
I was
nerves?
Shot. Nerves, but I also have a personality where I care a lot what people think. And sure. I think what makes me great in my job now held me back as a golfer. And so it like, I would always root for everyone else. And I would always, you know, wonder what everyone else was thinking. Or I always want, I'm a people pleaser. And you can't be that if you're, you know, a professional athlete. You know, you need to be about yourself and think you're great. And, you know, right. I'm just not that confident that way.
So you just didn't have the self-confidence.
No, yeah. No. And I do, like, with other things, not when it came to my golf career, but I think it was from the very start, I always had people telling me that I was terrible. So obviously you're not going to flourish.
But you were an accomplished college golfer.
Yeah, but golf's all about confidence and
absolutely.
You know, believing that you're great. And if you don't believe you're great, then you're never going to do that well.
Which brings us to cakes. And if you're watching on NBC Sports Washington, we have some video which we're going to show.
This is great. This is the highlight of my day.
And Paige Spernak is going to comment on Cakes' swing. This is from the Purple Heart Foundation.
Purple Heart
tournament.
Open. We were hoping that you could analyze Cakes' swing on the video.
Yeah, I need some tips. I need some any advice you could provide.
Try not to laugh too hard.
My tip is bring the club back a little further.
Oh, that was it?
I don't want tips from you. I want tips from Paige, like an accomplished golfer.
Well, number one, he has the worst golf shoes in the world.
Yeah.
By the way,
I thought it was going to keep going, and it just stopped. It just stopped at hip level.
I know, ear level. I need to extend the swing. I believe those
your
are golf shoes.
Swing
I think,
longer
I think
than
he needs
your...
longer shorts.
Yeah.
He wants to just wear pants.
Nice, short, compact swing there.
See?
It's a geriatric
Paige
swing.
Just find the positive out of it.
I would first say work on your flexibility.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe some yoga?
Actually, stretching, yoga?
Yeah, that might help.
He's got no flexibility. That's so funny.
He's taking it back just like right at hip level.
Right?
And then no.
And then stops right there.
Lower body movement.
See,
really
here's my problem, Paige.
Honestly, it's not bad. You just need to like take it back.
It's like his joints don't work.
Yeah, just like, no. It's going to stop.
It doesn't. The joints definitely don't
work.
But
at least you're out there.
That's
all that matters.
Yes, I'm out there all
but
the time.
Unlike me,
or twice a year.
Unlike me, he doesn't enjoy it.
You don't enjoy it?
That was a charity tournament that he was in. He only plays in charity tournaments. He doesn't enjoy it.
He enjoys the beer.
I enjoy the camaraderie. I enjoy being out in nature. It's the actual swinging of the golf club that
like
I'm not that crazy
about. It's the keeping score part.
Yeah,
well,
that part
I mean,
haunts me.
I would enjoy it either if people were laughing at my swing all the time.
Well, you just laughed at him.
Well, you were laughing, so I thought it was okay to laugh.
Just following your lead.
We were bullying him.
By the way, Paige does, we should say this, Paige does have a win.
I do have a win.
She won on the Cactus Tour.
I do.
That was
very
in,
nice.
Was that in Arizona?
Clap
yeah,
that
it was
up.
In Arizona.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you do have a win on your resume.
Yeah, professional win.
Absolutely.
I've accomplished.
Do you think you'll ever play in an event again, ever again?
Potentially. Maybe down the road.
How often do you play now? Just with your friends?
Maybe 5 times a week still.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, all the time. I'm traveling a lot now, so I haven't played as much. But I love it. I love the game so much. And that's kind of transitioned into the role that I'm doing now is growing the game of golf. And I think people lump together professional golf and recreational or amateur golf. And I think they should be more separate. And I think, you know, we can do more to bring people in and make it more welcoming and more fun. I think there's a lot of golf snobs out there. You
Don't
know,
an amazing stat.
Right, Saldez, he's one of them.
Amazing stat. Because you're with We Are Golf. Follow them on Twitter at We Are Golf. $4 billion annually in charitable impact. And, you know, you and I are similar in that we only play casually, often play in just charity events.
Right.
I agreed to play in October in some charity event. That's amazing, $4 billion.
There's so much good and all the jobs that they provide. And it's really incredible, everything. I mean, people don't realize how many people play, you know, or, you know, that doing charity events and how much they're giving back and how much golf is important to society. And again, it's just getting more people to play and more and, you know, doing more.
I'm sure everybody wants to take a picture with you when you play golf with them. Who have you really looked forward to playing with that you have played with? And who do you really want to play with that you haven't played with yet?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Got to put on the spot here.
I would say I didn't play with him, but I, in Dubai, I walked around when Rory was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And to see him hit shots the way he does, mm-hmm. like his driver, like he drives the golf ball better than anyone else. It was so impressive. And there's, like, you know, amateur golf, then mini tour, professional, and then his level. Like, it's just, it's incredible. Like, the talent he has and how he hits it. And I was so impressed. And usually I'm not, like, that impressed by watching someone hit. But he was so impressive. Someone I really want to play with.
He destroys the ball.
He does.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so fluid. And he's just, he's not, like, a really big guy.
Was he about 5'9"?
I think he's, like, 5'9" and pretty lean. Right. I mean, he's in shape,
strong,
but he's lean.
But
yeah. And he just kills it. It's really cool. His swing's perfect. Someone I really want to play golf with, I've always loved Adam Scott's swing. I think I would.
So you're sticking with golfers. There's not like a random celebrity out there that you'd want to play with that would be a fun round. You know, because you get.
I played with Kid Rock, and he was so much fun. It is fun to play with different, you know, either athletes or celebrities. And
was my swing better than Kid Rock's? Please tell me yes.
He's not a bad golfer.
Oh,
he's
no.
not a bad golfer. He's pretty good. But it's funny to see these, like, Hall of Famers just not be very good at golf.
Right, right.
And, you know, you're like,
it's a hard sport.
I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I've watched you and you're so amazing and you're, like, the best that's ever lived, yet, like, I can take you in golf. Like, it's pretty cool.
So tomorrow's National Golf Day on Capitol Hill. How do people that are listening or watching get involved? Tell us what your activities tomorrow entail down on Capitol Hill.
So you can follow We Are Golf. We'll be documenting everything. We'll be doing live streams. You can also follow me at Paige Renee on Instagram. I'll be posting as well. But we're just going to be really just documenting everything we can and just showing all the really cool things we're doing.
You gonna get a chance to play any golf when you're here?
I don't think so. No, I'm pretty busy with all of the activations we're doing. So we're going to the mall after this to everyone's like planting grass and you know.
Were you gonna invite her, Jason?
No, I was just wondering if she's gonna go play Congo or RTJ or something. I don't know.
No, not this trip. But I'll have to come back.
Where do you go next?
Gosh, after this, I'm going back to Arizona to do another charity event, and then I'm all over the place. So it's. I don't even know. It's just they tell me where to go and I'm there.
Is it follow true? Is it on the gram and you'll know.
Is it true that you started to date one of your followers?
We're actually getting married.
Are you? Really?
Yeah. So
congratulations.
Thank you.
This is the former baseball player?
Props.
Yeah. So he was in town for a bachelor party in Arizona and I had an event at Topgolf. And so I walked in. He asked for a picture. He sent me the picture the next day through Instagram. He asked me on a date. I kind of pushed it off for a little bit.
He was stalking you a little bit. I mean, how many people ask you for dates on Instagram? Probably a ton.
Yeah, but he was really cute, though.
Oh, okay.
And he was really nice. So my parents were there as well, and he took the time to like go up to my parents and shake their hand and was like really sweet and really nice. And I was like, oh, like that's a nice guy. And then we went out on a first date and kind of been together ever since. So.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Cool. Thank you.
When's the wedding?
October 13th.
Wow. Incredible. Yeah. Paige, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Cakes, again, how can people get involved?
They can go to @WeAreGolf on Twitter, and it's National Golf Day tomorrow on Capitol Hill. It's the 11th annual. They'll be doing a lot of great work down there. Paige, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We really do appreciate that. Of course, you can follow her on the gram. Is it @PaigeRenee? I want to make sure we get it correct.
Just type in Paige Renee. It should pop up. And for everyone tomorrow, that it is National Golf Day, post all your golf pictures, #WeAreGolf, and I'll try to respond back to everyone who does that.
Awesome.
That's Paige Sporanek.
Thanks
Took
so
time
much,
out
Paige.
Of her busy day to join us right here on the Junkies on 106.7 The Fan.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm getting ready for our mock draft. By the way, which day is that happening? Draft day?
It is now happening Thursday.
Thursday
morning. It's Caps 1. There's no pressure to talk Caps on Thursday.
And we have all 13. Well, the 13th pick will be the listeners, correct? Or do you want to do something different?
I like giving it to EB, but he's out.
He doesn't want to do it.
So, yeah, we can have listeners do it probably.
All right, who's going to fill in for...
We're working all that out.
Yeah.
Valdez, I'm expecting... All right. To pull a name out of a hat at some point today, so I know where I'm picking.
We're going to do the drawings today.
I think we probably should.
Yeah, give me a little prep time.
I like to know a little bit in advance.
Hey, it's a disaster if the Caps play on Thursday.
I know.
They can't do that again. They've done it
before.
They've
done it the last two times, haven't they? Last 2 years. They might.
Gary Bettman's got to be smarter and look at the calendar.
I could be wrong.
Why would he do that?
I think they're going to start on Saturday. I think that... The NHL is going to look at the sports calendar and say, why are we going to go head-to-head?
Well, why'd they do it the last 2 years?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
You are right. Especially in this town. You cannot have the draft and the Caps game one of in the Penn series on the same night. Can't do it.
They might do it.
They might do it, yeah.
Hey,
I'll be salty.
Hey, I have a question for our draft.
What, Richie?
That we need to iron out. Yep. So if someone picks the Browns, are they taking the first and the fourth pick?
No.
Or are we just having separate people?
Separate picks.
I kind of like the one GM for the two teams.
No, yeah.
You just want to do it so you can take two quarterbacks and be a dummy.
Hold on. Browns get one GM per team.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So if you 13, get the first, you'll 13 get the first
different,
and four.
13.
Yeah, so if you pull the Browns out of the hat, you have two picks.
You get two picks. Because the first pick sucks anyways.
So who are you going to ice out?
I don't know. We got 13 people.
Well, the 13th are the listeners.
No.
We got
plenty of people.
Grant, Danny.
So we would have 12.
Tom Daly will be iced
Daly,
out.
Daly, Gar.
Poor Tommy. He was like, he told me he's coming in early on Thursday.
No, we'll find a spot.
All right, that's fine. You can do the
same.
That's fine. That's fine. Whatever you want to do.
Somebody's going to draw the short straw.
I just want to draw today. I want to know where I'm selecting.
All right.
By the way, if you may miss the Paige Sporanic interview, obviously you can listen to the podcast, but we are posting some pictures. You can follow us on Twitter @JunksRadio. And there may or may not be an upside-down photo at facebook.com/thejunks.
Well, I heard that Awad was really polite when he asked for his picture with the page.
Yeah, what happened
after
there?
We were done? I heard he was very delicate. And
how did Awad botch it? Probably on so many levels with Paige.
Oh, we're talking Awad?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's all bitter. He's just like cursing me out.
Did
so
he
I don't
pronounce
her
last name incorrectly?
He's doing an interview with her, like his 2-minute video after the show, and he said,
what are you,
hey, just say your name
is
Paige Sporanic or whatever.
Right.
What do we used to call her?
Well, I mean,
Sporanic.
He goes, hey, say your name's Paige Sporanic, and you're on 106.7 The Fan.
And she said, well, that's not my last name.
No, she just mowed through it and said her real name.
Right.
But the awkward part was afterwards, where I walked up to her, and I was hooking Valdez, because he's a big fan. I said, hey, do you think... we could take a picture with Matt here, please.
Yeah.
And Matt goes, yeah, I'm a huge fan, love golf, thank you very much. We took the picture. As soon as I take the picture, Awad yells, yo, let me get a picture.
I mean, why do you talk to people like that?
Like, it's just more of the same.
It's just awkward.
I mean, you'd think that
he
you were friends with her for 10 years.
And then I said something about it to him, and then he just kirked out on me like 10 minutes ago and said, all we do is pick on him, and... I said, well, JP said you didn't say thank you for a gift card he gave you. You definitely didn't say thank you for the Kava card I gave you yesterday.
He has terrible manners.
He really does.
He has, you know, when your kids are like 7 and 8 and you have to tell them to say thank you every time.
Well, the kid's 25.
That's what he is.
Why didn't you say thank you for the gift cards?
Well, I forget to say thank you every once in a while. I'll admit that, but at least I'm not talking behind their back like everyone else in this room. That's all they constantly do. I'm the nicest guy that works here. I don't say anything negative about any people. Maybe I forget to say please or thank you. Sue me, all right?
Right. He's in real defense mode right now.
He's such a donk.
How do you say, yo, let me get a pic to someone you've never met before?
Well, I said that to Drab.
He just yelled it out loud. Who knows who he was talking to?
Right. I mean, but here's the thing.
You were yelling at the room, basically.
Lurch, I walked her up the stairs. I walked her to the kitchen, showed her where the restroom was. We had a nice conversation. She already got to know me. So I wasn't worried
about
asking
her. You had a relationship with her already.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. She takes millions of pictures with every fan out there. You think she cares that AWOD didn't say thanks or please?
No, she doesn't care about you, but it's just...
No, he established a relationship with
her already.
It's
just normal to say thank you for things and please. It's just normal to be polite.
Now I'm interested in who he's referring to that Valdez and I trashed behind their back, because that's interesting that he just brought that up out of nowhere. That's kind of a bombshell.
Let's get to it. Who are you talking about?
I don't know why. What do you think it's a bombshell?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're obviously alluding to something, so
he
don't beat around the bush.
He likes to go scorched earth on people. That's his move.
He just went scorched earth, so I want him to go all the way in before we completely annihilate him.
Well, are you just not going to admit that sometimes during the junkies you say, this interview sucks?
Right.
These guys don't know how to ask questions? You guys say that all the time.
No, we don't say these guys don't know how to ask questions.
You say it about
Jason. Hope you don't say it about me.
I don't think so. I don't even know.
When it comes to interviews, I'm freaking Tiger Woods.
I thought you guys were fine with Paige. I didn't say that one time today.
But you're saying that at certain times with certain guests, they actually trash us.
I say it's not going very well.
Yeah.
That's fine.
But are they talking about...
We're producing a show.
Are they talking about one junkie in particular or just the show
sometimes,
in general?
Sometimes we'll say, Eric isn't even looking at the guests.
Yeah, Eric's staring at his phone. Eric hasn't asked a question.
I'm guessing we haven't reset.
We haven't reset in 15 minutes.
I'm
no one knows who we're talking.
Most
to.
Of the criticisms called, for Bickle or right. JP.
No, I think not very often JP. So that last interview. So, no, we did say something about JP because he made it awkward in the beginning with the social media thing.
Yeah, got a little awkward.
A little rough around the edges.
Well,
the reason I brought that up is because I don't know that. Everybody in the planet. I know in the golf world, people watch golf all the time, or mm-hmm. people like EB who are on internet on Instagram all the time. I don't know that everybody knows who she is or her background.
Well, they definitely don't.
That's how she got famous.
I'm just saying. It was the way you said it.
She was embarrassed by the term sensation.
Well, that was my fault. I called her sensation.
I know, but we didn't know what else to say.
She was like, oh, I hate that term. And he goes, why? You're on social media.
You
know what I'll say? When you call Lara Davies a big elephant, the page whose whole thing is anti-bullying.
Anti-body shaming.
But Lara Davies, she doesn't like Lara Davies. Lara Davies was a bitch to her.
So those are the type of things we say.
We're I not have taking, a problem like, with it. That's
or
not true.
Or Cake saying how much he hates golf to someone for National
By the
Golf
way,
Day.
We're a show. So I'm just being honest. The fact of the matter is you're actually taking it as listeners. Even though you're producers and you're part of the program, listeners are doing that.
Well, I know one thing.
Feedback to the show. JP's a big dummy. Cakes is this.
I know one
Jason's
thing.
I
don't want Adam in this little area anymore.
Ever?
Oh, you
I actually feel the same way.
I don't think he should be here.
Oh, you're ready to boot him?
Yeah, he shouldn't be in here.
Look at his face.
Shouldn't be in here at all.
I want the NBC Sports Washington cameras to get on his face.
What purpose does he serve?
People
in
are getting
exactly.
The face.
He's not doing the videos.
And,
there.
Exactly, and if he's going to take what we say about the show and about stuff that's going on and try and go scorch earth on us,
I
actually don't have his confidence to be in here.
Look, do you want to beat him up right now?
No, I don't want to beat him up. I just think he should go sit by his TriCaster.
Right? Isn't that where Ewan's at?
That's where Eric's at.
He's breached the perimeter at this point. He often leaves and goes to like his computer way back there.
Yeah, that's his workstation.
Right, so he should
this
be either the workstation
his
or the
This isn't his workstation. Well, let me ask you this.
You know what this is? It's his drab station.
How would you feel if, let's say, he was in the studio and, you guys are in break and you're talking about something that's private and then goes around and then, goes scorched earth on you about what you say?
It's a good point.
He loves the scorched earth
cliche. You know another point, Valdez? And I get it. It's not actually his job. But I went in there and I was like, why don't you put the Paige Spiranak group photo on Facebook? And he was going to do that, but then he put it on upside down. Cindy came in and he was like, can you do it on your phone? And I didn't know if I could do it on my phone. I was able to do it. But he often says that's not part of his job. So a lot of times I ask him to get up, basically. I say, can you get up so I can use that computer, put something on the Facebook page, whatever. All there are a bunch of soccer box scores,
of course.
Tennis rankings,
NBA playoffs,
his fantasy league. So what does he do in there?
I mean, he's working.
He updates the NBA playoff player pool.
Yes.
What's important right now is that he just crossed the line with Valdez and I. And yeah. We're not very forgiving of that by going on not. The air and saying that all we,
so
do,
you're
is
still talk, all we do is talk.
You're still kind of smiling, but no, okay. Valdez is actually distraught.
Well, we handle conflict differently.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife says that to me all the time when we're in arguments. Why are you smiling?
Yeah.
It's your defense mechanism. It's my defense mechanism. I'm the same way.
Now Valdez is smiling.
Yeah, now. Because he knows he's about to boot AWOT out of that room.
You don't think it's petty of them to talk all the trash every
Your mic's down, because I have that power. why don't you go sit by your TriCaster? Please.
No, turn his mic. But I want to hear what
he wants.
By the way,
this is what AWOT does. He changes the issue. When it's joning on him because of his rude manners towards Paige Spiranac, he has changed
Spiranac.
It.
You pronounced
your
name.
You botched your name.
Wrong again. Whatever.
It was about that. He's now changed it into these guys talking behind
that's
our backs.
He does that all the time. All he does is deflect. If the guns are trained on him, he's going to try to point them away as quickly as possible.
And, you know, and it's kind of our job. What we're doing is we're critiquing and trying to figure out a way to make it sound better.
It's called feedback.
Look at AWOD.
Well, I just don't understand. It's so petty for them to come in every single morning. They judge me based on my outfit, something I posted on Twitter the night before. And these guys, the biggest bullies in the room, get mad at me for a simple thing. I just feel like it's a weird.
Well, wait,
why do you
want to
work with them then?
Why do you want to be in that studio?
Yeah, why do you even want to be in here if we're bullying you so much?
What purpose is there for you to be in this studio?
Because he idolizes.
I know
Brad.
He wants attention dollars, but beyond that, what purpose do you serve sitting there?
His purpose is
during
to,
the segment versus the TriCaster.
Well, I'll tell you, his purpose is to promote himself and his AWOD right. brand. And whatever bar he's scamming for the week.
See, he twists it all around. We have friendly banter and we joan on each other.
Right.
And now he's bitter, so he's saying that we pick on him. He came here today and we were joking around that he put his arm around Dwayne Jarrett in this interview that he did, and it was just uncomfortable and it looked weird. So we were just ribbing him about it. And now he's using that as ammunition that we're bullies and we pick on him, which is just a lie.
And by the way, Drab does the same thing to me and I do the same thing to Drab. Drab commented on my shirt 10,000 times today and how much of a loser I am.
Wrinkled. I saw him do it. Yeah. He said the bottom of your shirt's butt wrinkled.
That's what we do in here.
Yes.
We're all friends. We give each other a hard time.
Awkward talk.
Yes, exactly.
All right. I'm sorry if I brought it up. I don't even know if I did.
That was way better than the EP.
Can you put his mic on just for one second? Adam.
Yes.
Do you want to remain in that studio or do you want to just move away from the bullies to the TriCaster, which is where you actually do your work?
I want to sit here so I can contribute to the show and so I can help out for
Why
certain subjects.
Why don't you come in when we ask you to, and you just start for the next, how about the rest of the week, just to see how it goes?
JP, this is just you trying to take me off mic again. There's an AWOD army. We did this vote. I won the vote. They want me to be contributing part of the show. I'm a millennial
Adam.
Voice.
I hate when he says
terrible.
That.
Terrible.
Adam.
You
know
I hate
what?
That
you know, what? I don't want on the show a millennial voice.
I don't want millennials.
Valdez and Drab, why don't we try having him sit out by the TriCaster, and then if he wants to contribute his millennial voice, we will request it, and then he can come in and use the mic. Fair?
Sounds great to me.
A temporary ban?
Hey, Jason, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
How you feeling?
How am I feeling physically?
Yes.
I'm feeling dipsy-doo-deedly-dee.
Yes.
That's just the way I feel.
That means there's still traces of the tramadol doing their magic in your system.
Those are just the words that come into my mind when someone asks me how I'm feeling.
Right.
Dipsy-doo-deedly-dee.
He said he just likes saying it.
Sounds like you're kind of upbeat and good to go.
I got to say that, and I got to thank my good friend Nikki Faramasca at Virginia Therapy and Fitness in Reston. This is the best, today is the best my shoulder has felt in months.
Very good.
Nice.
Now, I hope that continues. Now, maybe it's the tramadol. I don't know. But it's the best I've felt in months.
Very good. Happy
All right,
you're feeling
joining
well.
Us right now to talk some NFL draft on the Mattress Warehouse Hotlines, our pal Mike Jones, NFL reporter, now with USA Today. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
What's going
We're
on,
doing
Mike?
All right.
Mike, where in the world are you right now?
I am home today on the Eastern Shore. Tomorrow I head out to Cleveland.
Going to Cleveland.
Lucky you. You get to go to Cleveland.
Yeah. Can we call your house line? Because I would have bet $1 million that you were driving somewhere.
No, he is driving.
I am driving. I am taking my son to school.
He's in his hometown.
Got you.
Yeah. I'm always driving somewhere. Okay. Always.
Because Drab then whispered to me, let's call his landline.
No, he's on the move. Mike Jones is always on the move.
Hey, so Cleveland, I was talking to Valdez during the break about this. So they're rumored to basically take every quarterback, but then I heard it was narrowed down to either Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield, which really surprised me that Baker Mayfield could be the number one pick.
Well, it's not entirely surprising because I do know that there are some people in that front office that very much like him have been lobbying for them to take him. And so it's going to be intriguing, although, like, you really can never really believe anything you hear this time of year. There's so much misdirection. They could be throwing that out there because they know somebody loves him and wants to maybe move up a spot and give him a whole load of picks or something like that. I do know, though, there are people in that building who really like him, but it's just a matter of if everybody in that building is still on the same page about that.
Mm. So, Mike, we know Cleveland will take a quarterback, no matter who it is, with the number one pick. Are they married to staying at number four, or do you think, especially if they do throw a curveball and take Mayfield and Darnold is there, and somebody that they're not expecting to be at four is there, are they willing to deal that pick away, or are they resolute that they're going to have the first and fourth selection in this draft?
Well, I think that's the intriguing thing, and that's a big reason why I'm going to Cleveland instead of, you know, Dallas for the draft. It's just because it'll be really interesting to hear from their mouths after they make that pick, because they have a lot of options. They're in the driver's seat. If they get that quarterback and say that the Giants take Barkley and all the other quarterbacks are on the board, then you know there's going to be Buffalo wants to move up. Arizona probably wants to move up. You never know what the Patriots or their two first-round picks are going to do. So the Browns also have the two early second-round picks. So they can easily trade that pick, move down in the first round, then take those other two picks and move back up. They can move all over the place here. So they're not married to that fourth pick. They have flexibility, and that's the best possible situation for them.
Yeah, they got some wiggle room, right? Well, let me ask you this. So if they really want Barkley, okay, do you think that they have to take Barkley at one, or do you think that he would drop to four and they could take the quarterback at one and still have Barkley at four, or do you think the Giants are probably going to snag him at two?
I think that the strongest chance is that he probably won't be there still at four. Yes, the Giants probably, I know that they like him, but just the real question is, how good do they feel about that quarterback situation? And do they really love a guy enough to take him and then sit him for a year and pass up on Barkley? I don't know. I don't know if anybody really knows, but yeah, there is a possibility that if they pass on Barkley at one, that he won't be there at four, but there's also the possibility that, say they like Baker Mayfield and the Jets really love Baker Mayfield, then he's not going to be there at four. Or say that, you know, it's somebody else, Sam Darnold, and somebody jumps up. You know, they really have to have in their mind who they really want and take him with number one, because there's a good chance that either one of those guys just will be gone by the time that four comes back around.
You think that the Giants could surprise everyone and take one of the quarterbacks and groom him for a couple of years behind Eli? Is that possible?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I don't know if it'd be entirely surprising just because of the fact that, yeah, Eli is 37 now. And, you know, if they're looking at the long term, they got a new general manager. If they figure, okay, look, this year's quarterback class compared to next year's, you know, get the best available player now and figure the rest of the stuff out later on, and they take a quarterback, that would make a lot of sense for them as well. So I don't know if anything, I guess maybe if the Giants traded out of number two, that would be what would be surprising for me. I can totally see him taking a quarterback. I can totally see him taking Barkley.
Joined by Mike Jones, NFL reporter, columnist for USA Today. Follow him on Twitter, @ByMikeJones. Who's the Jonathan Allen of this year's draft class? A guy that's viewed as a top five, seven talent that's going to slide down the draft board, that's going to be drafted like 15 to 20. Who is that guy this year?
I mean, it could be Josh Rosen could be a guy. I mean, he was really up there regarded as one of the top quarterbacks, but it seems like as of late he's kind of slid a little bit. So you thought maybe it could be one and two, and you've seen Josh Allen rise. Josh Rosen has gone down a little bit, maybe. But you know, it all really just depends on what teams are willing to do if they're able to move up and you know, finagle it with picks and everything like that, then maybe he wouldn't slide. But it does sound like teams have kind of cooled on him a little bit, and it could be a guy that drops down more to the teen range when you thought he was going to be top 10.
So, Mike, let's say hypothetically that Rosen slides to 13 where the Redskins are selecting. I mean, that's the biggest no-brainer for the Redskins to trade back, right? To call everybody that needs a quarterback and say, hey, mm-hmm. you got to move up to 13. Rosen's still here. Let's do some business.
Yeah, I think that would be a good situation for them. I mean, they've got their quarterback situation stabilized for the next 2 years at least. You can get another young guy and groom him, develop him behind Alex Smith. You would definitely be better served if you're the Redskins by trading back and getting multiple, you know, if you get another first-round pick and then you get a second-round pick or something like that, or you get another high pick for next year. They definitely need to continue to build and strengthen this thing here. And so, yeah, unless there was somebody that they really were absolutely in love with, they should trade back if Rosen was sitting there or so one of the other, you know, top quarterbacks sitting there and people really covet him.
Let's just say at 13 that Roquan Smith, Derwin James, and Minkah Fitzpatrick were all still on the board at 13.
Yep.
Who would the Skins take out of those three?
Fitzpatrick. He is a guy that really could make a difference in their secondary. They have been putting Band-Aids on their safety position for so long, and also they believe that he's a guy that not only can play safety, but he can also slide and cover guys in the slot, be really versatile and effective back there paired with DJ Swearinger. So that would be a great situation. The Redskins would love it if he dropped down to 13. I would be surprised if he's there just because he's so highly regarded. But, yeah, that would be a perfect scenario for them.
Talking to Mike Jones now with the USA Today NFL reporter and columnist about the NFL draft. I'm intrigued with Lamar Jackson. It might just be because my son asks me about him all the time. What is your sense as to where he will end up?
I don't really have a sense right now. It's really hard to put your finger on and figure out. I talked to a number of people in the past week, and they kind of slid him down a little bit, and Mason Rudolph was bumped ahead of him. I think that kind of the way that he's gone about this whole pre-draft process has been a little frustrating for some people, not just because he doesn't have an agent, but not having an agent, he's hard to get a hold of. They're just kind of some just questions about how he's handling it, how he would handle himself, what he would be like as the face of your franchise. And then if he's going somewhere, it's going to have to be with a team that's very creative. Like, Jay Gruden would not be a good head coach for him. He doesn't like changing his offense, overhauling it. You saw he didn't really like running a lot of the zone read stuff that Shanahan's ran for Griffin. He's like, this is my system, so it's not going to be just any coach that would take him. So that's going to probably cause him to slide a little bit. But I think the best situation would be for him if he had a team that has a veteran quarterback that he can learn behind, but also they have a creative offensive coordinator that doesn't mind going kind of off the standard script and really do things to help him ease his transition to the NFL.
I could see the Saints maybe, at wherever they're picking, 27, 28, snagging them there. I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be anywhere late first round, could be early to mid second round.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, do you think it's a monumental gaffe by the Redskins if they take a Darius Geis at 13 and don't trade back on the pick or don't capitalize on a really good defensive player being pushed down the draft board by all the quarterbacks being taken in the top 10?
I don't think it's a major gaffe just because of the fact that they have, look at their running game.
Yep.
They've been looking for a solution on the cheap for quite a while now. They got lucky, not lucky, but who expected Alfred Morris to be as good as he was as a sixth round pick? But now he's gone. They let him go, and they've been looking for an answer at running back and haven't really had a game changer. But if you look at teams like the Cowboys or the Rams who invested high picks in running backs, and those are the really talented guys, they've really helped transform their offense. And so if the Redskins do that, then, I think that that's a good thing. They're just really not. You can't really look at their roster any one spot other than maybe left tackle and say that it's a gaffe if they take this player. If it's a highly rated player, they could use the help there because they're not one piece away. They're still a ways away and need to really bolster their team in a number of areas.
All right, Mike. Always appreciate the time. It's Mike Jones from USA Today. Talk to you soon.
Have fun in Cleveland, buddy.
All right, thanks. I'll see you guys.
Yep. All right, man. Say hi to Jimmy Haslam.
Will do.
All right. We gotta select our draft spots.
Hey, Valdez has got to put all the names.
I gave it to Drab.
These guys were fighting about it. Valdez was, I think he wrote down the teams.
Okay.
And Drab didn't like that. He wants to write down the names. I don't know.
No. We're doing a draft and we don't have all the GMs ready.
Oh.
That's
what
we
need to figure out who's in and who's out. By the latest dynamic in there, I'm thinking Awad might be on the out.
Yeah, I don't know if Adam can be a GM.
Oh, he's going to be so bitter. All right, well, you figure
who's
going to
be the millennial voice?
Yeah,
God only
knows. Can we just draft the people that are here that you like right now? And then the people you dislike, you can let them draft later or select later?
We'll do it in the 9 o'clock hour. We got to wait for the midday guys to get here.
Okay, we can do that. Join us right now to talk some Caps. It's one of our all-time favorites, our pal Craig Lachlan, the Locker from NBC Sports Washington. What's up, Locker?
Hey, it's a good morning, fellas, isn't it?
It is a good morning.
It's a great morning.
That must have been a fun game to call last night.
That was awesome. I mean, it was a great playoff series overall. I thought it was the best one of the first round. I was pumped because they competed, man, both teams. I mean, they left it on the ice. It was great. It was a very well-played series, and the good guys won. So on to Pittsburgh. Here we go.
So was the turning point, I have to point to Holtby getting inserted late in game two, and he wasn't able to save that game. But, I mean, he was pretty stellar in net for Coach Trotz and the team. Talk about going to Holtby. We think he made the right decision by starting off with Groovy, but Holtby was a no-brainer starting in game three.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest decision of his time here for Barry Trotz. Who the heck he was going to start in game one? But I think you guys nailed it. I think Grubauer, with his body of work down the road, down the end of the season, deserved the first game. I was sort of caught off guard that he actually started him the second game. I would have started him right away the second game after Grubauer lost. I'm a big proponent of, you know, you win, you're in. And he lost game one. I would have went right back to Holtby. But as it turned out, he changed it up after the second period. And Braden Holtby's on a mission. It looks like a different goaltender to me. He just looks so different than he did when he was in his struggle mode. Now he's in his Braden mode, and this bodes well for the Caps against the Penguins because he's going to be the man on the hot seat.
Have you seen that before? We had Coach Trotz on, I don't know, a month or so ago, and he kept using the word reset. We're going to press the reset button for Braden Holtby. Have you seen that before where it's worked for a goalie?
Yeah, it worked for remember last year, if you guys remember the end of the season, we played St. Louis, and Jake Allen was yanked like four games in a row by Ken Hitchcock. And they actually gave him, they called up the next goalie the next day. They went to the extreme and actually just said, look it, reset. We're going to give you a week to just reset. You're not going to be with the team. You're going to be with the goalie coach. And they actually brought a kid up from the minors. And all of a sudden, Jake Allen came back and he was a different goaltender. The Capitals didn't have to go to that extreme because Holtby wasn't struggling as much as Jake Allen was. But at the end of the day, it seems to work. I think that, you know, you go through, it's probably more mental than physical for Braden, the amount of games he's played for this Caps team in his career and over the last couple of years. So I think that was perfect timing. That was another, if you look at the season, a great coaching move by Barry Trotz. Number one, it was getting him in game three. And number two, it was giving him the reset that really, you know, propelled the Caps over Columbus here.
Locker, Ovi was spectacular last night. Two goals in the win. He now has 103 games played and 98 points scored in those playoff games. So any people who are still saying, well, Ovi doesn't produce in the playoffs, they're just not watching. They're not watching what he does in the postseason.
Right, because all the fans, all they want is the Stanley Cup at the end of the tunnel. And along the way, I mean, he's done everything he possibly can to get this team to the promised land. I look at him, I look at Backstrom, I look at Braden. Braden's numbers are out of this world. But for Holtby, Hall of Fame numbers when the chips are down in the biggest games, you know, more important than maybe some of the stuff if you read or listened to some of Barry Trotz's comments, it was his block shots at the end that he actually liked more than his two goals because of his commitment. And to me, that word is reverberates through their locker room this year, fellas. It's just a different, you know, I look at this team and I thought, you know, we played hard last year, but there's another level of hardness to this team. And that's why they beat Columbus. They had to be hard. And to me, this sets them up better for the Pittsburgh series than maybe it ever has in the past. And to me, that hardness has to continue. But Ovi's the leader, guys. You follow your leader, and the big boys produced. All the big guys that we always bemoan if they don't produce, produced in this series, and then a couple of unsung heroes. And that's the perfect combination, guys, to win. And that showed last night, you know, even after game two, I told my wife, I said, we're going to win four straight, and we're going to win this in six.
Wow.
I just had more confidence with the way and how hard this team was playing and how they practiced. You guys wouldn't have believed how upbeat they were, even after 0-2. When I'm watching them, Columbus, you can tell a team when they're down, it's very quiet. You could hear a pin drop in some rinks when teams lose. That wasn't the case in game three. The Caps were flying around in their pregame skate. They're yelling and screaming. They're laughing. It just had a different vibe. And that's why at the time I said, these guys are going to be all right. These guys are going to push forward here. And what a way to win at four straight. That should give them a lot of momentum.
Locker, you mentioned the unsung guys. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that Smith Pelly had that sort of skill level on the goal that he showed last night, where he blazes down the left side and then he just rips one past Bobrovsky on his far shoulder. It looked like the game winner from Panarin in the first game here in overtime. It looked like a classic Ovi type of goal.
Yeah, and you know what? Smith Pelly has been in and out in the lineup. And he was a guy that I honestly said, uh-oh, he's going to be a fourth liner. I didn't think he can contribute at the higher level, which is the third line. He was sort of out of place on the third line earlier on, but he found his legs. You know, Smith Pelly did not have a good training camp. The Caps were slow, and he was not fast. And all of a sudden now, I think it's just the fact that the coach, you know, Barry Trotz, when he talks, you guys mentions trust a lot and all this with players. Well, he's got a tremendous amount of trust with Smith Pelly. And the other guy you got to look at is Chandler Stephenson. I was at training camp, and I remember doing a game in New Jersey, and they said, I'm not sure this kid is going to be able to play at the NHL level. We may have to send him down for some more seasoning. And he had a poor camp, and then all of a sudden now he's playing top six guys. Chandler Stephenson is playing top six. I would not have said that in a million years if you would have asked me where he's going to fit into this Caps lineup this year. So that's a good thing. And the big thing about the Caps staff, more than anything, is they teach and coach. But they teach a lot in practice. And I think the teaching has paid off for Smith Pelly, who sometimes you get to the NHL, you don't get better. Well, with the Caps, they've had to have a teaching mode to make some of these players that are sort of reclamation projects, you could say, in DSP, that he's now reclaimed and he's now what people thought he was going to be. And he's found his game, and credit goes to the Capitals coaching staff.
So we talked about why the Capitals are a little bit different than the last couple of years. And I just watched Pittsburgh from afar during the regular season. I know all about their superstars. I watched a little bit of the Flyer series. I watched the game on Saturday. Very impressive. 8 goals. They played a little reckless. Yep. They're a little reckless at times. Defense isn't great. They committed a lot of dumb penalties. But are they different? Is Pittsburgh any different this year than they have been in the past?
That's a good question. I would say they are. I just don't think. I think, you know, they lost Ian Cole, who played in Columbus on defense. They've lost a few guys. I don't think their defense is what it's been in the past. I think they're leaky at best. I think Matt Murray has had an all right season, not the double Stanley Cup type seasons he's had in the last 2 years, but they still have that compliment up front. I mean, they want to play. They want to get into a run and gun game with you, and they want to play offense and offense and offense. And the Caps have sort of, if you watch the Caps last night closely, they resemble the Pittsburgh Penguins in a lot of way because everybody wants to take the image of the Stanley Cup champs, okay? And I'll tell you the easiest thing to watch. Pittsburgh, when they get the puck, their D, even though they bobble the puck and they're porous sometimes if you hem them in, more often than not, they get the puck and they make one pass, and it's up the ice. And they throw it off the glass, and they have Gensel, Sheary, Crosby, Malkin chase after pucks. and put pressure on you immediately. If you watch the Caps game last night, carbon copy. If you notice the first period, they went D to D, off the glass, and we were in foot races with their D all game long. And Chandler Stephen, perfect example, even shorthanded, Beagle off the glass, great play. He chases it down, beats the defenseman, scores a highlight reel goal shorthanded. That, to me, is the MO that you're going to have to do against Pittsburgh. The more you do that and give them a little piece of their medicine, it's going to be tough on Pittsburgh, guys. This series, and better than the last couple of series, due to the hardness of the Caps and due to the style of play the Caps are now playing, I think they have a real good chance against the Penguins.
Talking to guy Craig Lachlan, the color analyst for the Capitals and NBC Sports Washington on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Wanted you to give a little shine to our guy, Jay Beagle. We've talked to him throughout the year. The guy is unbelievable in faceoffs. And I think he was a big reason that this team came back in the series, you know, helps out on the penalty kill as well.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun. Jay, me, and Joe always kibitz and laugh a little bit. You know, we call him, you know, Datsukian type hands, you know, when he gets the puck. And he is a big part of a heart and soul guy of this hockey team. He brings levity to the locker room. He's a great leader. But, yeah, the faceoffs are important, especially I take faceoffs and I look at it this way. I think defensive zone is where it happens and where the Caps are going to have to beat Pittsburgh. They've got a couple of good centermen. Obviously, Crosby has the same faceoff that he has done since he's coming into the NHL. There's nothing fancy about the way he cheats a little bit with his back skate and he sort of leans in on the faceoff that Jay knows about. And I just think Jay brings another aspect. Penalty killing, all-around good player, but the faceoffs sort of set him apart because the Caps want the puck. And you'll notice when he's on the ice, they get the puck and they spend very little time in their own zone. And he's a wonderful guy, and he's very colorful, and I'm sure he loved being on with you guys all season.
Oh, he's the best. When do you think this series
will start? Yeah, he is. He's awesome. When do you players think love him.
He's great.
When do you think this series will start?
I think it's Thursday, game one.
Oh.
I think they'll go Thursday because game seven will be Wednesday with the Leafs in Boston. I think it'll go Thursday and either Saturday or Sunday, depending on NBC and how the other series match up. The one out west, Winnipeg and Nashville is going to be huge. Right. And I think that, you know, the next series here, who the winner of Boston and Toronto plays Tampa, so that's another series. So we're going to have to wait on national television coverage first. But I think game one will be Thursday.
So you don't think they'll wait till Saturday for game one?
Oh, boy. I don't think so. I don't want them to. I think that's a bad decision. They got things going right now. Pittsburgh's waiting. Caps are waiting. To me, I think it'll be Thursday.
Hmm. Kind of disturbing because the NFL draft is on Thursday. Kind of, I can only focus on one thing at a time.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I know.
I don't think they'll look at that, but that's what I think.
What was the question I had for you? We were kind of talking about history and the history of the Pens Cap series, and we've beaten them one time. Yeah. That was back in 93-94. They've beaten us nine times, right?
And seven straight.
Seven straight.
I know all those numbers.
You know all the numbers. And I just keep thinking.
Oh, yeah, I know those numbers.
I keep thinking to myself, okay, maybe Pittsburgh's going to be the favorite. You know, they're defending Stanley Cup champions two times over. But maybe, I mean, is it hard? It's so hard to beat a team every single year in the playoffs. I don't care how good you are. I mean, this.
Correct. Numbers favor the Caps that sooner or later they're going to break through their demons, and they've been talking about that all year. You know, it's like at the end of the season, when you talk to Brian McClellan, whoever, he says, bring them on. I mean, to me, that's a different attitude than we've had in the past. They want to break this string of losing to the Penguins each and every year. And I think when you look at numbers beating us seven straight, 9 of 10 or whatever it is, this could be the year. A lot of pundits, if you watch NHL, the NHL network and that, last night even came out and said, I know Kevin Weeks said right off the bat, 4-3 Caps. Mm. So there's a lot of love because of the way the Caps played against Columbus that they're going to win this series against Pittsburgh.
So you feel good about it?
I do because of how hard the Caps are playing, guys. And that's the biggest reason. I don't look so much at skill and all that stuff. I saw if you see some of the, there was an old T-shirt last night, I think, forget who was wearing it, might have been Beagle or somebody that was doing an interview, and it said will over skill. And to me, it's got to be that will. And to me, they willed themselves to win against Columbus. they're going to have to will themselves to win against Pittsburgh, because the big boys should even out. Ovechkin's at the top of his game, had one of his best playoff series. Holpe's had one of his best series. Backstrom racked up the numbers. Carlson is out of this world. So you match that up against Letang, Crosby, Malkin, guys like that. All of a sudden now, this is a pretty even Steven matchup.
Locker, we are happy the Caps are moving on. Sad we won't hear the Locker and Joe B calls going forward, but it was a great year again.
I'll have to come on more with you, boys.
Yeah, well, do definitely.
It. More time for that. Locker, thanks
we'll
as always.
We'll get you on next week.
All right, next week is fine, fellas. Thank you.
All right, bro.
Locker's a color analyst for the Caps on NBC Sports Washington, and we love that man.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.